And good afternoon. It's a few seconds after the hour. I'm Ben Brown, and this is a Juno afternoon. This Tuesday, the 14th of July, Bastille Day, for those of you who are French. This afternoon, we've got some great guests. We're going to have Words 101 continue. Actually, no, that's tomorrow. This afternoon, we are going to be talking with Rochelle Sloss and two breakdancers from Uganda here for workshops, performances, and more. M.K. McNaughton will join us to highlight her art classes she'll be teaching in October. Margie Hamburger and Jody DeBrine will be here with an update on activities at the City Museum, and we'll learn about a new Kickstarter poetry project of Connor Lendrum and DJ Derigos. In addition to Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more, live at 3 on KTOO News, repeated at 4 on KRNN, and online at all times at KTOO.org. Thanks for listening. We'll be back in a little bit.
This is National Native News. I'm Tara Gatewood. A challenge to the recent election for the principal chief of the Cherokee Nation has been decided. Kurt Gwartney reports on last week's court ruling.
The Cherokee Nation Supreme Court had been asked to invalidate last month's race for the tribe's leader over issues of campaign spending. Speaking for the court, Justice Angela Jones said the allegations included in the appeal would not affect the June 27th election outcome. That means incumbent Principal Chief Bill John Baker returns to office. Challenger Chad Smith, who lost to Baker in a closely contested race 4 years ago, argued that Baker's campaign spent money on the race outside of the allowed window, 6 months before and after an election. Smith also alleged at least 3,000 Cherokee voters cast ballots without proper identification. The court's decision put to rest concerns that this election would be a repeat of the 2011 race between the two men, which saw both of them being named the winner at different moments before the court invalidated the results, leading to a special election that Baker won. Neither Baker nor the Cherokee Nation Election Commission, both named in the election appeal, offered comment on the Supreme Court ruling. Smith told the Tulsa World newspaper the court's ruling means that voters don't have to prove their identity before casting a ballot, and campaign election laws can be skirted at whim. For National Native News, I'm Kurt Gwartney in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
The United National Indian Tribal Youth Organization, or UNITY, is wrapping up its annual conference today in Washington, D.C. This year's event drew 1,600 UNITY youth participants from rural and urban areas and some internationally. They're focusing on a wide range of issues while discussing solutions for their communities. Alindra Logan is from Los Angeles. The Kickapoo Navajo College student says one area of need she'd like to work on is unemployment.
Living in Los Angeles, like as a youth, I see a lot of our older Indian people not have jobs, and we think like as a group something that's important is that they should offer like job training and more job opportunities so people can put themselves into the workforce and have some experience.
The UNITY youth are learning leadership skills, hearing from motivational speakers and officials in the D.C. area. Logan says she took part in Capitol Hill visits and took time to meet with an attorney to learn more about the field of law.
We went to the Capitol, and I was able to talk to somebody who's a Native American lawyer, and she was able to help me out because I wanted to be a lawyer myself, and she was able to tell me what she did to be successful.
The 18-year-old was also among more than 1,000 Native youth to hear from the First Lady last week at the White House Youth Gathering. She was among some of the attendees to meet Michelle Obama in person. Julian Castro, U.S. Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, says HUD is seeking increased funding for construction in Indian Country. One problem he says he's seen firsthand is overcrowding. The money would go to build new homes, infrastructure, and economic development.
In HUD's latest budget, we've proposed investing $748 million, $25 million more than in the last fiscal year, to address housing needs in Native American communities.
Castro says HUD is also proposing to increase the Indian Housing Block Grant, and the agency is looking at how to address the lack of housing for educators. Castro says they're seeking $10 million for tribes to update houses for those who come to teach in Indian Country. He made the remarks over the weekend during an address to a group of Native American journalists gathered in Washington, D.C. I'm Tara Gatewood.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. And by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C.
Support by United Tribes Technical College, offering courses online for a career in medical coding and for updating your current coding certification. Registration available through August 10th online at UTTC.edu.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
All right, good afternoon. It's 6 minutes after the hour. Ben Brown here on a Juno afternoon. And our first guest today, two of them have come from quite far away, the other not so far. Rochelle Sloss is here with Fahad, and Eric, who are from Uganda. So welcome, gentlemen, to Juno, Alaska.
Oh, thank you so much. We're so happy to be here. Yeah. And so happy to be in Juno first time, and it's really gorgeous, and we've been hiking. Oh, man.
We love it.
Yeah.
Well, good. Now, you just got here yesterday, I think you said, before we came on the air.
Yeah.
And so it's been raining most of the time that you've been here, and you still love it. That's great. Well, how upbeat and positive you are. And you're going to be here until Monday?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I think, the weather forecast, which isn't always right, I think you're going to get some different weather with a little bit less rain. So you'll get to see Alaska's capital city in all its variety, rainy and hopefully a little sunny. I don't want to promise anything. So you gentlemen are both breakdancers, is that correct?
Yeah, that's true. We're breakdancers.
And tell us about breakdancing in Uganda and how you came to the art and what you plan to do to share it with folks here in Juneau while you're here.
We come from a project called Breakdance for Uganda, an organization that uses breakdance and other elements of hip-hop to promote
positive social change. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and me and Fahad started dancing in 2006, and we didn't know anything about breakdancing, but we just came to this organization because we wanted a skill, we wanted to change our lives. We come from a slum, a ghetto in Uganda, so we wanted, in a ghetto, people looked at us as leaders, but we didn't have anything in life to change our friends, because all of them did drugs. So we joined breakdancing, and breakdancing is a way we give back to the community, to take all the people who are doing drugs to dancing, and they focus more on dancing than doing drugs. And that's how we joined breakdance, and we thought it was cool, because mm-hmm. we wanted to get all the skills, and we love dancing.
Very good, Eric. And so did you teach yourselves, or did you have someone who taught you back before you became experts?
That's a good one. We have a mentor or a leader called Abram Stecher. He started this organization, and he started with little skills, with few skills, and that's how we got the basics, and we went to YouTube and started teaching ourselves just like that. And mm-hmm. that's how we go into it, yeah.
But now you are the teachers. You've learned well enough to be able to teach other people. So you're going to be here, and you've got a bunch of stuff on the agenda. You've got, first of all, let's talk about performances. If people want to see you perform, when are they going to be able to do that?
Tomorrow we have a workshop on Wednesday, tomorrow.
Yep,
at the Jack.
At the Jack, it will be from 6 to 8 p.m., and it's $25 each. And there will be a fusion of African dance, so it's a get ready to
have to do some African dance and break dance.
Yeah.
All levels are invited to come over and learn everything. That's what we're doing tomorrow. And Friday we have a performance from 6 to 7 at the Jack. And it's free.
Okay.
Yeah, so we allow donations.
So there's a modest fee, $25 for people who want to sign up for the class. Do they have to do that in advance, or could they just show up tomorrow night for the workshop?
They can just show up.
Yeah.
And then for the performance, since there's no tickets, people can also just show up for that.
Yeah.
And that's going to be at the Jack. And you said 6 o'clock on Friday or 7?
Friday is 6 to 7.
6 to 7, okay, on Friday.
And
very
tomorrow
good.
Is 6 to 8.
6 to 8, very good. And so then you have a day off in between.
Oh, yeah.
Good. And you said you've already been outside hiking a little bit, but are you going to try to do some more stuff outside on Thursday if the weather permits and you have enough time?
Yeah, we want to go everywhere. we want to tour the whole Alaska in 1 week. we want to see everything. We love it here. Yeah.
Well, that's great. Now, how did you get all the way? And maybe Rochelle can help answer some of this. This is a long way from Uganda. Who helped sponsor your trip over here? And where else are you? I assume you're not just going to go straight back home after this. Are there other places on your American tour or your Alaska tour you're going to be going to?
Yeah, so I met these guys when I was living in Uganda, and they were part of this documentary, which we're going to show on Saturday. And as part of the documentary, they were able to come to the U.S. last year to do some promotion for the film, and again this summer. And we were also, they were sponsored by another organization that does youth leadership camps with an international group of people in Boulder, Colorado. So all three of us were there 2 weeks ago, and they were great. They sponsored the international flights, and then the documentary has been able to bring them all around California and other parts of the U.S. to do promotion for this film.
Wow, so you've got to go to some pretty interesting places.
Yeah.
And it's pretty hot in California right now. It's a little cooler up here, isn't it? So that's the third thing then. Now, the documentary is called Shake the Dust.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Shake the Dust is a hip-hop documentary, and it's within four countries, Cambodia, Colombia, Uganda,
and Yemen.
And it's mostly with these communities, how they've been like dancing and changing their lives. And some of them, they've been like, you know, like thieves and thugs and stuff like that. So bad. And then this like breakdance has been like changing their lives. And then their stories is really deep, because so much people like see them, see dance or breakdancers, and what comes in their mind is or thugs or this. But these people have lives, and these people have beautiful things, and like the way they want to really share with the community, teach and learn. So it's one of the things.
Yeah, basically Shake the Dust is a story that shows, that talks about breakdance, how breakdance has changed people's lives in all these communities in Uganda, Colombia, Cambodia, and Yemen. We share our stories. People in Colombia share their stories. Everyone shares the story. It shows how people, how they live in their communities and how they're changing people's lives, how they're changing all the youth in the community where they're from. And it's a powerful film that I'll recommend everyone to watch.
Great.
Because it's an inspiring film. It's going to be showing at Silver Bow Backroom.
Okay, the Silver Bow Backroom, and that's going to be on Saturday. And at what time will that be?
8 p.m.
8 p.m., and is there any charge for that?
No, that's free.
Okay, but the folks at the Silver Bow would like it if you bought something to eat and drink while you were there, probably.
Oh, yeah.
And we'll also be raising money for some of the youth empowerment projects in Uganda that Eric and Fahad are doing.
Excellent.
Yeah.
And so you plan to go back home to Uganda after your American tour and keep working with young people there to try to get more people involved in breakdancing and not doing drugs and having healthy, productive lives.
Yeah, that's true.
Excellent. Yeah. Now, the four countries you mentioned covered in the documentary, Colombia, Cambodia, Yemen, and Uganda, those are four really different places with really different traditions. Yemen especially is a very troubled place right now. It's on the verge of civil war, I think it's probably accurate to
say. Yeah, and some people who are in the documentary in Yemen are really suffering right now. They're hiding and they're really going through tough lives, tough situations right now. Some of our friends, there are studios in Yemen got broken, everything. So they're really having a bad time right now. They're talking to us. Yeah.
All right. Well, you're helping them out, I would say, by being here promoting the film so others can learn about them. Hopefully things will get a little more peaceful in Yemen and people can get back to dancing and doing things more fun than fighting with one another.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. Well, we are very lucky to have you here, Fahad and Eric and Juno and Rochelle. Thank you for bringing them back. Is there anything else you'd like to say to our listeners before we let you get out into this lovely Juno afternoon?
Oh, wow. We're so happy to be in Juno, and we're really welcoming you to come and support us, and we'll be so happy to see your beautiful faces on Wednesday. Don't miss the workshop at 6 to 8 p.m. All levels, $25 at the Jack, and Friday's the performance. We'll be like having some fusion of hip-hop, locking, like popping and breaking and dancehall and everything.
Yeah,
like, you just have to come there, you know. And Saturday, don't miss this beautiful and so inspiring documentary. This documentary will really open your mind, and you just see how really things happen in different world and how really it's amazing. Please come. I want to see your beautiful faces.
Yeah, we'll be happy to show the documentary to everyone in Alaska, in Juneau, because this documentary has changed our lives a lot, and we came all the way from Uganda to share our story with everyone in Alaska. So we'd love everyone to come and check it out. It's really powerful, because every time I watch it, I learn something from the documentary. So I can't stop loving it. I just want everyone to come and watch it.
I think they will share your enthusiasm once they see it. I will mention, I actually watched the trailer on the internet. I Googled Shake the Dust, and I was able to watch the trailer. So people can do that if they want to get a little bit more flavor about what they would be seeing.
Yeah, or maybe they can get it on Vimeo.
Okay.
It's not on Vimeo, and it's going to be on iTunes and Netflix soon. But it's on Vimeo right now.
But it'd be more fun to come and watch it with other people
with
a silver belt.
Yeah, it would be fun. Yeah. Watch it with us. Yeah.
with the two young breakdancers from Uganda.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Fahad, Eric, and Rochelle, thank you all so very much for being here. I think you're going to have a great week in Juneau. Very exciting, and I wish you all the best here. And as you continue back home, to keep doing good work.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
All right. Very good. Thanks.
We love you so much.
It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going under. It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going under. My brother's doing fast on my mother's TV. Says she watches too much. It's just not healthy. All my children in the daytime, Dallas at night. Can't even see the game or the Sugar Ray fight. The bill collectors, they ring my phone and scare my wife when I'm not home. Got a bum education, double-digit inflation. Can't take the train to the job. There's a strike at the station. Me on King Kong, standing on my back. Can't stop to turn around. Broke my sacroiliac, a mid-range migraine, cancer membrane. Sometimes I think I'm going insane. I swear I might hijack a plane. Don't push me, call, close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose my head. It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going under. It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going under. Child is born with no state of mind, blind to the ways of mankind. God is smiling on you, but he's frowning too, because only God knows what you'll go through. You'll grow in the ghetto, living second rate, and your eyes will sing a song, because they hate the places you play and where you stay. Looks like one great big alleyway. You'll admire all the number book takers, dust pits and pushers, and the big money makers. Driving big cars, spending 20s and 10s, and you want to grow up to be just like them. Smugglers, scramblers, burglars, gamblers, pickpocket peddlers, even panhandlers. You say, I'm cool, I'm no fool, but then you wind up dropping out of high school. Now you're unemployed, all non-void, walking around like your pretty boy Floyd. Turned stick-up kids, but look what you done did. Got sent up for an 8-year bid. Now your manhood is cooked and you're a Maytag. Spend the next 2 years as an undercover fag, being used and abused to serve like hell. Till one day you was found hung dead in the cell. But now your eyes sing the sad, sad song of how you live so fast and die so young. So don't push me, cause I'm close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose my head. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under.
And it's 18 minutes after the hour. Ben Brown here on a Juneau afternoon. And our next guest today is M.K. McNaughton, no stranger to a Juneau afternoon, but certainly lovely to have you back. M.K., how are you today?
Good, thank you.
Excellent. And you are a very busy woman, always doing wonderful things. And today you're going to be talking about some art classes that are going to be coming up in October. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Well, go ahead and tell us about the classes you'll be teaching.
Well, maybe the rain made me think about fall. It's a little early in some ways to advertise for October, but I'm a planner, and I think that's probably my strength in teaching, planning and teaching what I'm trying to learn. And so I'm lining up shows for myself, and as I'm thinking about that, I was thinking about my fall teaching schedule, and I like working in charcoal drawing and oil paint. So I'm offering both classes for adults, and teens are welcome to attend those adult classes. And then I'm also offering a kids art class in October. They're all 4 weeks.
Okay, so they'll pretty much run the calendar month of October, start at the beginning, go through the end?
Yep. One, the drawing class is on Sunday afternoons. Just impulsively, I thought 4 to 6 on a Sunday would be a good time to draw. And teens are welcome, along with adults. And we'll really study light and use still lifes to explore light and shadow and depth. And then the kids' art will be on Monday nights, right after school. And it's drawing, painting, but I'm incorporating humor into this class. I think one of the best ways to learn to draw is to really focus on what you're looking at, not on what you're trying to draw. And if you're doing that really well, sometimes things look a little goofy at first. If you're doing, for example, a blind contour drawing where your pencil's hidden in the drawing, it might look really goofy and kids get self-conscious about that. So we're going to just kind of embrace that and go with it and do things that are funny, but they're really teaching great skills.
Mm-hmm.
And get over the barrier of being self-conscious and just enjoy making.
And it's a safe environment. It's a class. This isn't the Royal Academy.
No.
People
no.
don't have to show anyone other than the people who are in the room at the class. So it's a really people should feel safe to push the boundaries and experiment a little bit.
Definitely.
Okay.
Definitely.
Okay, that's the second class, and then you said there was a
third
one.
And then the third one is oil painting Wednesday nights, and I've kind of developed my own style, and I've been teaching that, but I took a class this summer that was fabulous from a woman named Leah Wright, it's White, and she lives in Philadelphia. She came to Haines, Alaska, and her work is beautiful, and she taught me really different skills for how to lay down the paint and how to mix color. So I'm going to share some of what I learned from her and what I'm continuing to practice in color studies. So we'll do studies, for example, a still life with different colored filtered light so that you can see the same image in lots of different colors and practice mixing color directly on the canvas.
Okay.
So that maybe was more detail than you wanted to hear if you're not interested in making art, but if you are, it's fascinating. It's going to be fun.
And it sounds like the oil painting one might be for students that have a little more experience than the first two. The one for students sounds like you're pretty open to people who are beginners. And the drawing one, I wasn't quite sure, but it sounds like with the oil painting and the layering, that might require a little prerequisite skill.
Actually, all three of them are brand new beginners.
Oh, really?
Could
so just open
them.
For tabula rasa. People who've never done it before can come into the first class, pick up a paintbrush or a piece of charcoal, and just start working.
And people who have experience can also come
all
easily.
Right.
And there are a couple of people who've come to all of my classes over the past few years. So it pushes me as an artist and a teacher to come up with new things. And as I'm exploring and studying and pushing myself to try new things, I'm really excited to be able to offer these color studies. But it's a great way to learn. It's a great way to get started and to approach how to mix color, which can be kind of intimidating. The tubes don't exactly match what you want in your painting sometimes. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
No, so these are, we're talking with M.K. McNaughton about classes up in October. It occurred to me, this summer has been pretty nice, but there have been times where the summer has seemed like October. So I can certainly understand why you were thinking ahead to fall with a little bit of rain yesterday and today. How would people go about getting registered for these in advance, getting in touch with you if they had more questions, that sort of thing?
Oh, thanks for asking. They can look at my website, which is mkmcnaughton.com, and it's Mac, M-A-C, mkmcnaughton.com, and you can read about the classes there. And my email and phone are there, so if you want to email or call to register and reserve. And the classes are small. My studio is pretty small, so the adult classes are maximized at 6 and the kids at 8, just to make it a comfortable class. So my number is 957-2061, and I'll give my email too, mkmac@gci.net.
Okay, mkmac@gci.net, and this is M.K. McNaughton. So if you're interested in expanding your artistic horizons, whether in drawing or painting with oil, these are some real great opportunities for M.K. I'm sure you have many other things going on, but it's great that you're being so foresighted about trying to make sure you've got the right people in the class coming up in October. So 6 people for each of the 2 adult classes and 8 for the young people. Those could fill up by October pretty easily, I would guess.
They are starting to. I've had a nice response. I sent out an email. And but I make up new classes, so depending on interest in seeing. And I love mixed age, so I'm fine with that. Teens are welcome to mix with adults, and the kids' class can be a variety of ages. And I had a class last spring with all parent-kid teams. That was fun. That was really fun. But it's also fun when it's complete strangers.
Mm-hmm.
And you learn from each other. And the new artists, people maybe who've never tried art, can learn a lot from people in the class who are experienced. I think somebody mentioned in one of my last classes that that was one of her favorite parts of the class, that she was pretty fascinated by the other artists in the room. And I also offer art catering, and I'm starting up a new thing called, I don't know what to call it yet, but kind of an art party. And art catering is basically throwing your own class. It could be for a workplace or for a group of women who had little kids who were kind of exhausted, hired me to have a party in their house. They brought wine, red wine and chocolate, and I brought the art project.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm kind of an art waitress. I'll set up and I'll clean up. You have fun. You bring the wine and chocolate. I'll bring the art. And so I do that. Or a couple tourists from Nevada called me up recently and said, we want to do art. Someone gave us your name. And so I picked them up and took them on a little sketching trip. And then we went and did a painting project in my studio.
And those were visitors off a ship who were just
visitors
the day?
Off a ship. I just picked them up.
Well, there's an alternative to going dog sledding on the glacier, certainly, isn't for everyone. So that's very. I commend you for diversifying the array of experiences available to people visiting us on large ships. So
they're not. I mean, that was lucky that they found me, but I put the word of mouth out there that if you have friends or family visiting and you want an art party experience or just to have a party in your house, you can. And I'm inspired by, I'll forever be inspired by Shoefly, by the parties they had, they used to have. I don't know if they do anymore, but it was you bring the wine and your friends and we'll sell you shoes.
Mm-hmm.
What a brilliant plan. So thanks to Shoefly, I'm kind of incorporating that idea into my own with art parties. I have been making giclée prints of my paintings. My paintings can be kind of large, so I make little giclée prints, which are really nice ink on archival paper, and they make great gifts. They are for sale in some of the galleries, but if you wanted to have a party in your house and host it kind of like a Tupperware party, maybe that analogy is not helpful. And I also make little tiny paintings on little tiny easels that are cute. They're original works of art. So if you want to host a party and invite your friends, drink wine, eat snacks, dessert, whatever, and if they want to buy stuff, they can. And you, the host, can pick out a print and a painting to keep. And there's no requirement that you have to sell anything, but, you know.
So it's different than a Tupperware party in that regard.
It's not a cabbie clothes party. I've been to those where it's a little pressure, like the hostess has to sell a certain amount of stuff, and I don't want to do that. But I like the idea of people having fun, and if people are looking for gifts, it could be convenient. You could do all your gift shopping.
Your gift creating there.
So
really a whole array of artistic opportunities thanks to M.K. McNaughton. She's got her classes coming up in October. And again, one more time, your web address that people could contact you or your phone number, and then they could also ask you about the art catering or art parties or any of these other fun things we've been talking about.
I'll give my... on my website, because on my name, I have to spell it, M.K. McNaughton, McNaughton like the bad whiskey, MacNaughton, mkmcnaughton.com. And then if you can remember my name, which I hope you will, then you can find my email, my phone number, and take a peek at classes, and giclée prints are for sale on my website, too. But and I welcome good ideas. If people have other great art party ideas and innovative projects, call me.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, MK. I hope classes are fun this fall, and I hope you can host a lot of art parties between now and then.
Thank you.
All right. Very good.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 14th of July, 2015. It's Bastille Day in France, commemoration of the storming of the Bastille Prison, 1789, a crowd of 10,000 people, which started the French Revolution. Even though the prison held only 7 inmates, none of them political radicals, just 4 people in for forgery, 2 lunatics, and 1 sexually deviant aristocrat, all of them annoyed by the disturbance, nonetheless, it's celebrated today. and people shout, Vive 14 juillet, long live the 14th of July. It's the birthday of Woody Guthrie, Okemah, Oklahoma, 1912. His older sister died in a coal fire. His mother was institutionalized. His father quit town for Texas, leaving the 14-year-old boy to play harmonica for sandwiches and coins on the streets of Okemah. He left for Texas himself, 1931, formed a group called the Corn Cob Trio, played on the radio, hitchhiked, rode freight trains out to California, played on the radio there, made his way to New York, where he wrote This Land Is Your Land in 1940. It was on this day in 1881, Billy the Kid, Henry McCarty, was shot dead at the age of 21 by Sheriff Pat Garrett in Fort Sumner, New Mexico. Billy had escaped from the county jail. He'd killed the two guards on duty, headed for the home of his friend Pete Maxwell. The sheriff was waiting inside the door and shot him once above the heart, which inspired numerous books, the first of which was written by Sheriff Pat Garrett himself. And there were many novels written about Billy the Kid, poems, movies, and songs, Woody Guthrie, Bob Dylan, Aaron Copland, and Marty Robbins. It's the birthday of Ingmar Bergman, born in Uppsala, Sweden, 1918, studied theater in college, made his way into the film business, 1941, rewriting screenplays. His first big international success, 1955, Smiles of a Summer Night, which won the Grand Prix at the Cannes Film Festival. The Seventh Seal, Wild Strawberries, followed. In one interview, Ingmar Bergman admitted that he couldn't watch his own films anymore because he found them too depressing. It's the birthday of the playwright Arthur Lawrence, born Brooklyn, 1917, who always wanted to write musicals. He said, when I was a kid, 7 or 8, I lived in Brooklyn. There was a stock company, and my cousin and I would go Saturday afternoons. I remember two productions. One was No, No, Nanette. I still remember them, twirling the parasols, thinking, oh, this is wonderful. He went on to write two big musicals, West Side Story and Gypsy, and three memoirs. Here's a poem for today by Robert Frost, entitled Neither Out Far Nor In Deep. The people along the sand all turn and look one way. They turn their back on the land. They look at the sea all day. As long as it takes to pass, a ship keeps raising its hull. The wetter ground, like glass, reflects a standing gull. The land may vary more, but wherever the truth may be, the water comes ashore, and the people look at the sea. They cannot look out far, they cannot look in deep, but when was that ever a bar to any watch they keep? Neither Out Far Nor In Deep, a poem by Robert Frost, from the Complete Poems of Robert Frost, published by Henry Holt and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity, introducing a 10-minute fit test to challenge memory, attention, and problem-solving to calculate baseline scores. Learn more at lumosity.com. And by Progressive Insurance, working to make progress for more than 75 years. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
All right. Welcome to a Juno afternoon, 34 minutes after the hour. Ben Brown here. And I have two guests from the Juno Douglas City Museum, Margie Hamburger and Jody DeBrien. Welcome, ladies. Let's talk about what's going on at the City Museum.
Yeah, well, Jody, you want to start and talk about exhibits?
Sure. We just finished installing a very new and exciting permanent exhibit in our General History Gallery. We're calling it Juno and Our Changing Shoreline. As part of our long-range plan, we wanted to get more diversity into our permanent exhibit, so this is our first step to that goal. So in the exhibit, we look at the downtown footprint and how it's been used as a Tlingit Native fish camp to a mining town to what it is today and how the shoreline has changed throughout that history.
And it has changed quite a bit, hasn't it?
It has changed quite a bit. Yeah. You know, over 100 acres have been added. 100 acres?
I think it's
194 acres have been added to the downtown footprint from fill from the mines.
So, absolutely. And that's going to be a permanent exhibit. And is that already fully installed and open and ready to be seen?
It is fully installed. So it was made possible through a grant and aid grant from the Alaska State Museum. We were able to purchase a new case to develop this exhibit and house it. We also want to thank Ed Kuntz for his assistance in writing, as well as Mark Whitman and then the City Engineering Department, because they helped me figure out that number of how many acres.
And get you the rocks.
And get me the rocks. We went on a rock field trip. And so in the exhibit, there are actual physical AJ rocks.
Okay, so this is what is underneath. I live at Park Shore, so that's underneath about half of where we are at Park Shore.
Exactly.
And the other half is on a spit of land that used to jut out there, is my understanding.
Yep.
Well, I have a personal interest in coming and seeing this exhibit because I kind of want to know what was there before the place I live was built. So.
Exactly.
And I'm sure there are many other folks who live downtown, and even those of you who don't live here, you drive past it every day, so that sounds like a really exciting exhibit. What else is going on at the City Museum?
Well, we have our summer exhibits are up. Which were all about photography. So those are up through the end of September. And so, you know, make sure to get there before the end of September. We are in our fee-paying season, so there is admission through the end of September, and then we get supported by really generous donors in our community, and then the community is welcome, or anybody's welcome, October through April without that. But anyway, it's worth spending a couple of dollars to come see. People have really been enjoying it. A lot of the photographers that are in that exhibit for a long time, Junoites are familiar to them. And this, not only does it show some of their photographs and stuff, but it kind of gives their backstory. Jody's done a really wonderful job researching that and really kind of making these people come alive again, bringing them back to life, so to speak.
Yeah.
Outstanding. Now, you mentioned the admission fee, which is in place during the summer months. People who don't want to pay that one-time fee, there is a Friends of the City Museum program, isn't there?
That is correct. If you join at the family membership level, the $50 level, you and a guest get in free to the museum, you know, the full calendar year. There is also an annual pass that you can buy at the museum. But become a friend, and you get it, depending on your level, you get newsletters, you get invitations, you get the patron level, you get a free walking tour, which are great. So there's lots of benefits to becoming a friend.
And that kind of segues into walking tours, so that's where I chime in.
Absolutely.
But the other activities, other than seeing the exhibits, which are great to see, during the summer we do give walking tours every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday at 1:30, and that's touring the historic, it's called the Downtown Historic
Walking tour,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're kind of giving the overview. A lot of the visitors to our city are enjoy that, but locals as well. And we end up at the Alaska Capitol Inn, that restored building. That's the old John Olds house.
And that's just up the hill right behind the City Museum.
Right. So then we have tea time in there, and that's really lovely. People enjoy getting inside that building, which is gorgeous and all kind of outfitted of the period. So those are happening. And then I have a special program that I've kind of scattered throughout the summer called Local Heroes Walking Tour.
Mm-hmm.
And this is targeting children and their families, trying to make a sort of a child-friendly story of walking around town and hearing stories of some people that we've deemed heroes in our community, in our history. And I've got one happening this Saturday at 10 to 11:30. It's almost full, so I could probably squeeze another couple of folks for that. But then there'll be another one in August 22nd, which is also another Saturday, just after school starts. And that one has plenty of space still. So if people that is a free program, the Local Heroes Tour. Another thing that I just want to plug here is our Juno Explorers. And once a summer, I take a week and do sort of a camp for kids, or a week-long program, and we call it Juno Explorers. I do that in the spring over spring break as well. It's going to happen this summer, that week before school opens, which is August 10th through 14th. And I'm really excited because the Juno Empire is going to partner with me on this. And we're going to produce a newspaper. And we're going to learn all the steps that it takes. And we get to tour the Empire and meet with Michael Penn and learn about how to take photographs and journalists and do writing. And by the end, we'll have produced a newspaper.
And how do people – that sounds like quite an innovative and outreaching program for the City Museum. Obviously, this is not just confined to the four walls of that adorable little building.
No, exactly.
How do people get signed up for that specific program if they're interested?
They can go to our website, and it's www.juno.org/museum, or just Google, you know, Juno Douglas City Museum. And under museum classes, people can get all the registration information. They can stop by the museum, and I should mention we're at the corner of 4th and Main, and we're open Monday through Saturday, or they can give us a call and or an email, and we can get that information to them.
All right, so it's very easy, and that's the city's website, because the Juno Douglas City Museum is part of the city and borough of Juno.
Correct.
And so we talked about this a little bit before we came on the air, but now right next to us here at KTOO, the State Museum is getting very excitingly close to looking like a finished building. Across Main Street from you at the City Museum, the Capitol is undergoing some serious renovations. You guys are kind of elevated in status this summer. So have you seen an uptick in visitors, and has it been kind of exciting to have additional traffic coming through?
It is exciting. We had definitely seen, you know, a little bit of an uptick in visitors, which is great. You know, the galleries are busy enough to where we know that there's people in the museum, which is great. And I feel like we've gotten a lot more locals in the summer because mm-hmm. of the one photography yeah. exhibit of identifying people. So it's great to see, you know, the locals there as well as the tourists enjoying the museum this summer.
Excellent. And on the horizon, once things settle down and we're back in the fall season, anything exciting for the fall or next winter that you know about, or is that still in the planning process?
Oh, no.
We have a lot going on.
Oh, well, do tell.
The next exhibit, so the photography exhibits end in September, so in October. October and November, we are hosting a traveling exhibit curated by the Valdez Museum called Communities, Disaster, and Change.
All right.
Yes.
And of course, Valdez was eradicated, wiped off the map by the great earthquake of 1964.
Correct. So this is an anniversary of that and based around that. So it features 28 Alaskan artists, each with one work in this exhibit. And it's been traveling all around. I think it's in Washington State right now. And so we're the last stop for it. And it'll be up in October and November. So to complement that, get the Juno history involved in it, I've been working on a Disasters at Home exhibit, which will feature historical photographs of a 1936 landslide, a 1960 snowslide, about 7 or 8 different fires, and some photos of Gold Creek flooding, which happened over various years. So
some natural and man-made, perhaps even disasters that happened right here in the capital city. People may not know. They're not as famous as when Treadwell collapsed or anything.
Right. You know, so, and some of the photos are very powerful and moving, and I think it'll be a good exhibit. So that those disasters exhibits is what's coming up in the fall.
Excellent. Very good. And, of course, people should remember that you can actually rent the City Museum for events.
Oh, thank you for saying that. Yeah.
Right? And
yeah.
It's a great venue. People do fundraisers there. You probably had weddings.
No, I don't think we've had weddings,
but we've had a lot of fundraisers and some, you know, like conventions that are in town looking for, you know, particularly if people who want a little bit more of an intimate environment, you know, that's not maybe quite so roomy as like a Centennial Hall kind of thing. But, yeah, it's a lovely place to host an event, and I'm the person that people would talk to, so thanks for mentioning that.
Well, absolutely. I was just recalling the last time I was there was, in fact, for an event, and it is a lovely place for an event, and people can bring their catering in, they can arrange mm-hmm. for the drinks, and then mm-hmm. it is very intimate. So mm-hmm. keep that in mind if you've got folks coming to town for the fall, for the legislative session, because it's a very nice place, and then they get exposed to Juno's history and culture a little bit while they're doing their other stuff.
It's an interesting place to be in.
Excellent. Well, Margie Hamburger and Jody DeBryan, thank you so much. Anything else you'd like to add for our listeners before we sign off this afternoon?
I guess just give the phone number. So we're at 586-3572, and we have a website, and we also have a Facebook presence, and we've been posting some things regularly there that are really interesting. So go check us out on Facebook.
All right. Thank you, Margie. Thank you, Jody.
Thank you.
This is BirdNet. Have you ever watched crows dive bombing a hawk or an eagle? Several crows will gang up and pester a larger bird into departing their breeding territory. Perhaps you've seen starlings or blackbirds do the same to crows. When smaller birds join forces to ward off larger birds, it's called mobbing. This behavior, like calling family members for help, is used by many bird species. The best time to observe mobbing is spring and early summer, when breeding birds are trying to protect their nests and young. Barn swallows, which nest near humans, are a good example. If a pair of swallows perceives a threat to their nesting territory, they sound the alarm. Half a dozen neighboring swallows will arrive almost immediately to help scare away the intruder, be it a house cat slinking into the garden, or you venturing too close. If you hear a ruckus and spot several crows circling and swooping toward a tall conifer, it's a good bet that there's a raptor tucked in the tree, a hawk perhaps, or an owl. These birds know that there's strength in numbers, and they've learned to join forces to protect themselves. For a link to a video of crows mobbing a bald eagle, visit our website, birdnote.org. I'm Michael Stein.
And it is about 14 minutes before the hour. Ben Brown here on a Juno afternoon. And I'm with DJ DeRego, who
hey.
Is here. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm great.
Good. That makes me happy to hear. We are going to learn about a project that DJ is doing with Connor Lendrum, who's not here. We'll get to that in a moment. A Kickstarter poetry project. So what are you gentlemen working on?
Okay. So basically, for the past year, I've been traveling around just breaking my own heart, writing this book, just pouring myself into it. And as I was writing it, I was over in Asia at the time, and I messaged Connor back home, and I was like, hey, man, I'm going to take this on tour. Would you want to be my manager and kind of help me, like, push me? Little did I know that actually translated into, Connor, would you drag me through this kicking and screaming? He's been an absolute saint for this whole thing. And the reason he's not here today is actually because we have the same day job over at Kindred Post. So he's probably over mailing stuff, singing, swooning ladies right now. So that is what Connor is.
Hopefully he has the radio on.
Right. You know, he doesn't need it. He does not need it. So, yeah, the project has kind of taken a life of its own from there. And since we've been here, we've been doing shows and kind of, like, really pushing to get this Kickstarter going.
Right. Okay. And so what's the end result going to be?
The end result for us is to kind of take it and be able to go down to the lower 48 and now kind of into Canada, it looks like, and take these, the poems that I've written, and perform them in people's living rooms and kind of like go out and kind of shake things up in the poetic community. I mean, I'm sure and I know that people have been doing this already, but it's kind of like my chance to really get my hands on that action and Connor to like kind of support that and for us to just really bring something we both like passionately believe in and kind of like, you know, spread it to others and create a global community kind of.
And you actually have some of your writing with you here.
I do. I have a piece. Yeah. So the kind of the way, if I could really quick about, is kind of the lead into this.
Absolutely.
I'm just going to read part, the beginning to a longer piece that I have. And if you'd like to hear the whole thing, you can kind of come in and check it out. So what we've been doing with the show is the process is all, we've been fortunate enough to team up with some great musicians and like Guy Unzicker and If the Ocean. They've played shows with us. There's lots of people who kind of come out of the woodwork and all my friends who have these like little talents that they, you know, like these little musical talents that they've been able to kind of throw in and collaborate with. And what we've done is we've done these living room shows. So we'll just go into people's living rooms. We'll bring just a bunch of beer.
Now, do they know you're coming over or do you just show up and knock on the door?
There was one time when my friend was like, oh, I thought this was, oh, okay, well, let's do this. And we cleaned up the living room and we just kind of pushed everything aside and did a show in his living room. But yeah, no, it's these people, they invite us in and we just kind of like come and really just try and charge people's hearts for a night. So with that, I guess we'll just jump into the kind of like beginning of one of my pieces that's a little bit longer, but I'll keep it in just the beginning.
Okay, go right ahead.
It's kind of the flagship for the whole book. It's called Boy. What will they remember about us when we're gone? The first exhibit shows nothing, dark, long, low blank. There is safety in the darkness here. A single speck of light turning endlessly in the long, low black. Dreaming about the moon, dreaming of ignition, obsessed with the soon-to-be. I hear a woman singing, a smooth, gentle hum, a steady sway, a soft hand against my feet. This is the place I am referring to when I tell you I miss the way things used to be. And this is the unmistakable beginning. This is the story of man meets electricity, of exalted love in a kissless age, a man of a thousand little victories and too much wine, climbing out of dark and wild shine, grim day and savored night. God wrote my story when he was buzzed enough to dance, whispered heavily into a lover's ear, we are all going to be all right. Heavy hitting and hard to forget, and the whispers can be heard in the long, low stillness. They whisper out, Lily, I am coming. Lily, I am on my way. My exhibits have numbers now. And that's kind of the lead into this, like, much bigger piece where I go on to kind of, like, break my life down by age.
When did you start writing that?
When did I start writing that? Actually, the fun bit of that is I started writing that when I was in middle school. Like, and that's the – I mean, like, obviously there was a huge break in between. No, it was high school. I'm sorry.
Okay.
And I got an assignment from one of my teachers, Ms. Reyes, who was a lit teacher at JDHS. And she had us write memoirs, and I couldn't decide the format that I wanted to do. So what I did was I broke my life down by grade is what I did. And so I kind of told like a big defining moment for each grade. And as I kind of like re-went back into poetry, I found that piece of writing that she loved it. Like she was very supportive of it. And it was one of the first times that I'd ever given my writing to someone, and she had been like, you need to share this. Like you have something to say. And so I let that kind of mull around for years, and then I've got that piece, and I was like, okay, I can make this bigger, and I can really kind of take it and stretch it. And so from there, the piece has just really taken on a life of its own, and I don't think I'll ever be done writing it. And obviously, like, there will be a time where, you know, I just want to keep, like, as I kind of change and adapt and move, and that's the whole, like, theme of the book is identity and kind of, like, identity next to other people and, like, so, like, as I've written this piece, it's kind of become this big love story to, like, my life and the people in it and, like, one person very specifically. And it's just to see it received so well by people, it humbles me every time.
Absolutely. Well, that is really wonderful. And, you know, poetry is taking on a larger and larger role, I think, in young people's lives.
Absolutely.
As evidenced this year by the stunning win of Mava Ordaz, Alaska's finalist in the Poetry Out Loud National
Recitation. Right.
I have to put a shameless plug for the Alaska State Council on the Arts in our Poetry Out Loud program
definitely,
in there.
Definitely. Wherever, yeah. No, I totally agree, and I feel like what's exciting too is to kind of see young people kind of re-emerging into poetry. Because for a long time it was a medium where people are like, ugh, that kind of old, antiquated, like pastoral like way of talking about poetry, and so they kind of like were really turned off for a long time. But with like Facebook and social media and poems going viral on Facebook and like other social medias and people just like pouring these little poetic nothings into like status updates, you see that people are kind of like yearning for it and like reaching out for it, and so it's just there. And I get this brilliant opportunity to just kind of participate in that, like participate in like the what's coming next of poetry, you know, and I just get to be one of many people doing this incredible thing.
Mm-hmm. And people have heard of poetry slams, but there's so much else in addition to the poetry slam movement going on.
Absolutely,
about poetry
absolutely.
Saturating
lives. That's a perfect time to kind of talk about Woosh Kanade is kind of where I got my start. It's the poetry slam in town. But as far as poetry slams go, it's unlike anything that you would kind of expect from that community. And a lot of people who do come up from the lower 48 are like, man, like, I've never been to a slam like that, because it is such a loving and welcoming environment, and the competition is very friendly and not as like hooky or punchy all the time, as you know, it doesn't need that mm-hmm. to kind of like thrive. And the community is just super, you know, loving and welcoming no matter what. And it's been an honor to participate in that, but also to kind of do this tour and not need to be like a big you know, state champion or what have you, has been like a blessing too. And it kind mm-hmm. of shows like poetry is now kind of blurring the lines between music, and that you can just go out with your best friend and stake your claim.
It doesn't have to be a formal presentation.
Exactly. Right. I feel like my poetry can kind of lack the grace of a lot of like the poets that I hear or like know or write with. And I'm just like, man, you guys blow it away every time. And I sometimes can't help but feel like this kind of like crude dude just like walking around, but people respond to it. And that's what I love. It's such an honest message, and the honesty doesn't get lost in like the translation of it all.
And so back to the Kickstarter element of this. If people want to support the project, how can they go about doing that, DJ?
So if people want to support the project, what they can do is they can go to the Kickstarter, and you can just search Boy. It'll be one of the first projects that pops up, and it sounds like it's here in town. It's a $6,000 goal, and we've been fortunate enough, within the first week, we've gotten like one-third of what we're looking for. So if you want to go and support it, you won't get something for nothing. You give something for nothing. We give back. There's shirts. You can get books. We'll come perform for you. If you know anyone who's like in the lower 48 who would be like, yeah, I would love for someone to do a house show. Like, we'll come to your house and we'll do a show. We'll lead workshops. There's tons. I mean, really, just like the idea is not to flip a buck here. It's to kind of flip into a bigger community and just fold in, because I know it's out there and I just want to be part of it so bad.
So all you need to do is go to Kickstarter and search for Boy, and you will be on your way to helping DJ make this a reality.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for visiting us for this afternoon, and I wish you all the best as you continue your work on this project.
Absolutely. Thank you.
And it's about 4.5 minutes before the hour. I'm Ben Brown, and you've been listening to a Juno Afternoon this Tuesday, the 14th of July. The weather forecast for the rest of the day is for patchy fog and some showers. And we're looking at heavy showers at times, maybe a low of 48 to a high of 54, southeast winds to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow, on Wednesday, we'll have more showers, a high around 58. And then tomorrow night, mostly cloudy. Thursday, decreasing clouds and scattered showers, a high around 61. And then partly or mostly cloudy conditions going into the weekend. So a little drier than it's been. A few more opportunities to get outside and do some fun things in the out-of-doors. Tomorrow afternoon on a Juno Afternoon, Jamie Waste will be your host. And he'll continue the Words 101 series with Debbie Fenyant, Margie Beadle, and Kathy Nielsen, volunteers at the Friends of the Library's amazing bookstore. We'll get an update on this week's Poetry Slam. Gary Carson will be here with a preview of next week's Musical Magical Comedy Show fundraiser for Reach. And we'll learn about harnessing energy from hydrogen with guest Bill Lady. And, of course, there will be a Writer's Almanac and Bird Note and some music. So tune in tomorrow for a Juno Afternoon. That's 3 o'clock on KTOO FM, repeated at 4 on KRNN Arts and Culture for Alaska's capital city. And stay tuned here for All Things Considered, coming up on Public Media for Alaska's Capital City. Ben Brown, thanks so much for listening this afternoon.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K210AM in Gustavus, K220BT in Hoonah, and K210AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI Cable on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org.